In this study of Shir HaShirim, I wanted to show you some classic allegory, psukim in Shir HaShirim, which have a great deal to say to us. We have not yet even scratched the surface of the heart of Shir HaShirim and what it's all about, except for the fact that it is a love story, a very powerful love story between a shepherd and his girl, the dode, the beloved, and the one whom he loves, the raya, the shepherdess, the friend. So what I chose to use as an example of a powerful allegory is this. Here is the girl who is looking for and waiting and longing and yearning. She's searching for her beloved, and finally, one night, he knocks at her door. And what ensues is a tragedy. She should have jumped out of bed and gone to the door and opened the door for him, but strangely enough, Pashatiti et kutanti, I've already taken off my cloak. Rachatzti et raglai, I've washed my feet. How am I going to get dressed now? And I'm going to get my dainty little fisalach dirty as I walk to the door. And the dode, the beloved, keeps knocking on the door. And finally, she goes to the door with a tremendous amount of love. He's gone. And the search begins all over again. Hachmatzat hasha'ah, the opportunity, the great opportunity, the great moment was missed. So we gave two examples of how this allegory is understood. One is by Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the Kuzari. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the Kuzari reads this as the story of the return, or maybe better said, the non-return of Jews to Eretz Yisrael at the time of the second Bet HaMikdash. Kol dodi dofek, the Nevi'im, God was telling Jews, come home. And what was planned was God wanted to bring his divine presence down upon Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, and that this would mean that they will be rejoined now for all of eternity. The second Bet HaMikdash would remain forever. But it depended on Jews just picking themselves up and listening to the Nevi'im, who in the name of God are knocking on the doors of their hearts. And the terrible tragedy, he says, is that Jews didn't come back. And because Jews did not come back in their masses, a great opportunity of history was lost. From there we moved a thousand years to the great essay of Rav Soloveitchik of 1956, the Shir Yom HaTzmaut 1956, where he presented the great essay Kol Dodi Dofek. And there the Rav says that he distinguished in those years between 1948, or maybe even better said from 1945 until 1956, when he's saying the Shir, he senses an incessant pounding, the knock on the door, Kol Dodi Dofek, the beloved, the Rebbe Shem is knocking on the door of the hearts of the Jewish people. And he isolates six separate and distinct knocks on the door. You have them on page 3, and we were up to the third. The six knocks. First he said, we'll go over it briefly. The first knock was in the political arena. Something happened in the United Nations when the vote was taken on partition, which of course meant the establishment of a Jewish state, that the United States and Russia, Feuer und Wasser, you understand, the two great antagonists, and all of their satellites joined together for the first, most probably the only time in all of history that they all voted together as a bloc, East and West. So the Rav describes that he doesn't know what the press or the observers who were there think, or what they were thinking,
when they heard the session being brought to order, he knows the one who was bringing that session to order was the Dod, the beloved. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam opened up that session because it was going to be a historic and divine session, because the UN, he was only able to say it up until 1956 that they hadn't done anything meaningful since the vote on the establishment of the State of Israel. We, of course, have another 50 years over the Rav, and we can say they still haven't accomplished anything beyond the establishment of the State of Israel. For some, it's looked at as their most memorable and accomplishment, and for many others, it is seen as their most tragic accomplishment in history, because we know, of course, that all the problems in the world are only the result of the existence of the State of Israel. Without the State of Israel, there would be peace and tranquility on earth and, goodness to all men. The second knock on the door, of course, he says, is the knock on the door on the field of battle, that here it is, a little Eretz Yisrael, with a small population outnumbered hundreds of times by the enemy, was able to vanquish and destroy the enemy on the field of battle. This was a Ness of such proportions, and the Ness means that God is knocking on the heart, the door of the heart of Klal Yisrael. Peacefully open up for me, my sister, my bride, my dove, my complete one, let me into your heart. The third is in the theological world. For 1500 years, if not more, the fundamental principle upon which all of Christianity was based, from the time of Justin Martyr, that the Jews, because they had rejected Christ, were therefore rejected by God, and the term Israel and the name Israel and children of Israel now became the title by which the Nevi'im are talking about the Christian world. And all of the promises that were made by the prophets throughout Tanakh are now addressed to the Christian world, that ultimately the Christian world is going to come and they're going to inherit Eretz Yisrael and they're going to establish their capital in Yerushalayim. What do you think it was that fueled the Crusades? The Crusades were fueled by the idea that it's about time that the real children of Israel stand up and be counted and go back and conquer the Holy Land from the infidels. It depends on whose side you on, who's the infidel. How many hundreds of thousands of people were Jews and others who died, were killed, were slaughtered, were massacred during the Crusades. Crusades were all built theologically on the idea that the land of Israel belongs to the new Israel, because God rejected the Old Testament. He now has established a New Testament with the Christian world, and they are the real children of Israel. And then the establishment of the State of Israel. The establishment of the State of Israel was a body blow to all of Christian theology. A blow of such proportions. It shook completely the foundations of all of Christian theology, all of Christian belief. It can't be happening. It can't be happening. And therefore, of course, the Christian world, of course, has been very, except for fundamentalist Christians, they've been very, very cool. Why do you think they were always demanding the internationalization of Yerushalayim? Because they felt, at least, if the Jews have Eretz Yisrael, but we have Yerushalayim. Oh, we have Yerushalayim. So, of course, then it meant that if they were reeling for 19 years from the blow of the establishment of the State of Israel on Chav Ches Iyar Yom Yerushalayim, when Yerushalayim and all of the holy places came under Israeli sovereignty, this was already a blow from which they will never recover. Never recover. So the Rav said, the third knock on the door is the shaking up completely of the theological world. The theological world. By the way, we once talked about Arnold Toynbee. Arnold Toynbee was a good Christian. He was a good Christian, and therefore, of course, for him, the establishment of the State of Israel was a terrible, terrible blow that he could not come to grips with. Now, we mentioned in an issue he wrote 14 volumes of the study of history, the great historian of the 20th century, and he simply couldn't find place for the Jews. So he described the Jews as a fossil, a leftover from a previous civilization, but they're really not alive, because according to him, all civilizations struggle, rise to power, decline, deteriorate, and disappear. And the only ones who didn't disappear were us. So therefore we have to find some way of explaining it. So he explained it that every civilization leaves over shards, you know, pottery. So here, poor old Yidden remaining, you understand, they're the fossils. But of course for him, his whole historical basis fell apart, because never in history did a fossil ever create a state. Fossils don't create states. Of course, he was still alive at the time, sure. He was shaken when the Six-Day War. By the way, the Six-Day War, of course, is going to be, I have the right to add to the Rav's six knocks. There will be the seventh knock, which is going to be Chof Ches Iyar. What is the... Arnold Toynbee, The Study of History, 14 volumes. The fourth knock. It says, there were many Jews alienated from Judaism, distant from Judaism, maybe even ashamed that anybody should know that they are Jewish, wanted to hide from their Jewishness, flee from it, was shaken by the establishment of the State of Israel. The heroic stand, all of a sudden there's a new dimension of a Jew. This is not the Jew that goes or is taken like sheep to the slaughter. This is a Jew who can stand up and fight. All of a sudden, it was a sense of, there was great pride in being a Jew. This is knocking on the doors of the hearts of the distant, the assimilated, the alienated. In another way, this is what said by Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky said that the establishment of the State of Israel, and it's in his Sefer Tite Nemes LeYaakov, only made it into a footnote, but certainly there's reason for that too, where Rabbi Yaakov said that the establishment of the State of Israel saved faith by the Jewish people. Because following the Shoah, the survivors, and a world who saw the pictures of what took place there, there was a fleeing from Judaism, a flight from Judaism. Because the big question, where was God at Auschwitz? We don't have an answer for that question. But for the one who asked that question, there was now something else to say. It seems that God is alive and well in Eretz Yisrael. So there was a sense of some kind of a balance or some kind of a compensation, something that says, yes, there is a Rebbeinu Shalom and the Rebbeinu Shalom exists. So that the fourth knock on the door was the knock of, according to Rabbi Yaakov, it would be saving faith by hundreds of thousands of Jews who were on the way out. And of course, the fact that this brought all sorts of thoughts into the minds of people who are alienated and distant. One of his significant pieces is the sixth knock. The fifth knock on the door of the heart is For the first time in a long, long time, in 1900 years, Jewish blood is not Hefker. Jews are going to stand up. Jews are going to fight. And he becomes very, very excited over here. He says, I know that an eye for an eye doesn't really mean an eye for an eye. I know the halacha. That we interpret the halacha that you have to pay the value of an eye for an eye. But he says there are times that we have to know that ayin, tachat, ayin has to be taken absolutely literally. We have to fight back. We have to know that this is our responsibility. Avraham Avinu understood when Lot was captured that he's going to have to go out, and regardless of how many people may fall in battle, you don't take my nephew into captivity. He didn't have too much nachas from the nephew. But it was his nephew for whom he had taken responsibility when he took him out of Ur Kasdim and took him on the journey to Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu sees a Jew being beaten by an Egyptian. Vayifen kovacho, he turns here, he turns there, he looks, is there anybody who cares? Nobody's going to care. I have to take care of that Jew. If it means I have to kill the Egyptian, I'm going to kill him. And I'm not going to get all unnerved and upset about it. I don't want to kill. The one who comes to kill you, you have to know that you have to kill him. That was God himself. Egyptians had to learn. You threw Jewish children into the Nile? Jewish lives are not hefker. You're going to pay for it. You're all going to be drowned because of that. You can't do these things and get away with it. The establishment of the State of Israel made it clear to the world that Jewish blood isn't hefker. I think if our leaders would only be reminded of that and know when to act and how to act and to act forcefully. The sixth, according to the Chav, the sixth knock on the door is that the land is open to all Jews. You will all remember, I know I like to tell this to when I speak to young students, you know, in their teenage or even beyond. What are you talking about? Anybody that's younger than us doesn't know a thing. Doesn't know what Jewish history is all about. You know, and I have a State of Israel, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, then you have to start telling him, you remember the song, Vuahin Velergein Veveten Ferinmir. What a song that was. They don't want me here. They don't want me there. There was no place for the Jew. How many, 500,000 Jews remained in the same concentration camps after the war as DPs? Ask a teenager or what DP is. Don't have a clue. The displaced persons camp. Displaced persons. That's what Jews were for 1900s of years of Golos. Wherever we were displaced. And if we thought for a while that this is our place, they came along and they displaced us. That's what happened. Then, of course, the great movement of population, Jews walking across Europe in order to get to the Mediterranean, to get on an unseaworthy boat in order to come to Eretz Yisrael. Our kids, you know, what do you do? 9 hours and 45 minutes from New York, all right? Two good meals, six movies. You know, it gets confusing. You don't know which movie to watch. And then after that's all over, you complain, of course, that the seats were too small, it's made for midgets, and... Sometimes you have to be reminded, you know, that we had Zaydis that walked across Europe in order to come to Eretz Israel. It's an unbelievable thing. Any Jew in the world has a place to come. I mean, we lose sight. We lose sight of all of this. We lose sight. That, of course, was the sixth. I mean, each one of these knocks on the door, of the heart of the Jewish people can be elaborated on. But take a look. Who would have? It's unfortunate, of course, that the establishment of the State of Israel came 10 years too late for European Jewry, but who knows what was waiting for Jews in Arab lands. It was most probably reaching the boiling point if there would not have been an Eretz Yisrael for them to go to. Who knows what would have happened to the Jews in Arab lands. So the Rav says, Kol dito dito fake, the Rebbe Yishim knocks upon the hearts of the Jewish people and says, let me in, piskili, open up for me. My sister, my bride, my dove, my beloved. We, of course, can add the Six-Day War. The Six-Day War. And the conquest, the liberation of Yerushalayim. Have we frittered away those great moments? We all remember those great moments. We were in Toronto at the time. I remember, you know, as the noose was tightening around Eretz Yisrael, Pasha Jews started pouring out money for Israel, all sorts of gatherings, demonstrations. But it was more a sense of Klal Yisrael worldwide was gripped with fear. Not many times in history, or do I remember. The history that I lived through with that kind of a fear. And then, of course, the great miracles and the liberation of Yerushalayim, greater than all of them. But we're not going to go into that. If we're going to go into the liberation of Yerushalayim, we're never going to get out of here today. But that, I could say, is the seventh knock on the door of the hearts of Klal Yisrael. So here we have, I would say it's more than knocks on the door. At this point in time, it seems like it's an incessant pounding on the door. Have we responded? I don't know. I don't want to answer that question. Have we responded fully? Certainly not. But I think that the Rebbe Yishim has compassion. He knows that we've been through a great deal. My only concern at this point, of course, is that the real struggle for Yerushalayim is taking place right now. And the real struggle for Yerushalayim is not a struggle with the Arab world, but it's a struggle right inside the Jewish community in Eretz Israel. All right, I haven't spoken politics, but this is not politics. I haven't spoken about it in a long time. But there's one thing that got me yesterday that just wiped the floor with me. Time magazine this week has the 100 most influential people in the world today. The 100 most influential people in the world today. And one of them is Tzipi Livni. And the article about her is written by no less than Condoleezza Rice. And it's wird mir schwarz, it becomes me black before the eyes. But here it is. Here it is. Last May, Tzipi, like me, became the second woman ever to hold her nation's top foreign policy job. Okay, I don't want to hear about that. She's a confident and impressive woman. Uh-huh. Okay, but here it is. This is the point. Tzipi and Prime Minister, you know, of course, that Tzipi refers to her as Kandi, I imagine. Tzipi and Kandi. Tzipi and Prime Minister Ehud Olmert have the foresight to know that a Palestinian state is in Israel's greatest interest. and that they must pursue the cause of peace with their Arab neighbors. President Bush and I deeply share this goal. And for Tzipi and me, it is now the focus of our work together. Okay. So she should only know that Tzipi is most probably fighting for her political life right now, and she most probably blew it last week, but that's not the point. No, no. That's not the point. The point over here is you have to know that when anybody says they're in favor of a two-state solution, they're saying cutting Yerushalayim in half. I learned here in 1955 and 56, I remember the barbed wire, I remember the ugly walls of concrete. It was a terrible, terrible knife in the heart of Yerushalayim. And for 19 years, until 1967, there were two cities in the world that were divided by a wall in the middle. That was Berlin and Yerushalayim. For 19 years, there was an ugly, ugly equation of these two cities on Chof Ches Iyar Yom Yerushalayim. That equation came to a glorious end. Only one city is divided, and that's Berlin, and Yerushalayim is united. There was a little item in the paper 3 weeks ago. In the middle of the night, the last section remaining of the Berlin Wall was taken down in the course of the middle of the night. Nobody should even notice that it's being taken. And what they're saying is, yes, they're going to divide this city again, and there'll be the barbed wire, and there will be the... Are they out of their minds? So you have to understand that Palestinian state, that Tzipi baby and Ehud, our friend, they want to divide Yerushalayim. And I think as far as Yerushalayim is concerned, you know what the mitzvah of Yerushalayim is? About Yerushalayim, Jews are never logical. Jews have to be completely emotional. You don't listen to anybody or to anything. I'm not interested in your stories. I'm not interested in your politics. About Yerushalayim, that's it. There's a love affair between Klal Yisrael and Yerushalayim. And lovers are not interested in logic. I remember reading just 2-3 weeks ago, there was a great writer, Shmuel Schnitzer, who wrote for Ma'ariv for many years. I read the article, I have it at home, the article that he wrote 2 days after Yom Yerushalayim. 2 days after Yom Yerushalayim. And he describes what happened to this people. He describes how a whole country is electrified with a powerful emotion. Hundreds of thousands of people are making their way to the Kotel. The pictures of that first Shavuos, women and babies and carriages and thousands of people. And he says, all over the country, we all feel it. Where was this all for the 19 years that we didn't have it? You didn't feel it. All of a sudden, it all came to the fore. And I'll tell you, I was at a kiddush in Har Nof a few weeks ago, and I met a friend, Benji Levine. Benji is the tzaddik, Yerushalmi, Rav Aryeh Levine's einikel. So I asked him, tell me about the Zayda. And we started talking about Yom Yerushalayim. He says, Yom Yerushalayim. I was here then, and my Zeder of Aryeh told me he wants to go to the Kotel. There was still shooting. And he says, I went with him, we walked all the way, and we came to the Kotel. And he asked me to help him tear Kriya. He tore Kriya when you see Churban Habayit, what's left over of the Beit HaMikdash. And immediately afterward, he said the bracha Shechiyanu v'kimanu v'giyanu lazman hazeh. I see in this act of Rab Aryeh the two faces of Klal Yisrael today. There are those who may be ready to tear Yerushalayim in part because they don't understand what Yerushalayim is. And then on the other hand, you know what? If we made it through 40 years and we still have all of Yerushalayim, For that we have to say, Zeh Yom, Os Hashem, Nogilo, V'nismach Avo, this is the day that God has wrought. Let us be full of joy. Ah, but David HaMelech was so smart. What does he say after Zeh Yom, Os Hashem, Nogilo, V'nismach Avo, Ono Hashem, Hoshiyono? How long will it last? Can we keep it up? I see in those two psukim, Zeh Yom, Os Hashem, and the great prayer, Ono Hashem, Hoshiyono, the Shechiyanu and the Peering Kriya. And we have to be aware that this is the reality. This is the reality. Never be logical about Yerushalayim. All right. Back here. We're going to have to learn all of them before Shiva, of course. The fundamental Perush of Shir HaShirim is Rashi. Fundamental. And we're going to have to learn this, but even in advance of that, maybe there's one line here that has to be one line over here. Rashi is going to bring the great statement of Rabbi Akiva, where Rabbi Akiva said, and this ultimately defines Shir HaShirim. If you look on the, follow me, on the first page, the top is the Rashi's introduction. By the way, this is Rashi's introduction in Hebrew. Down here, I have an English translation of that introduction. And immediately under it begins Rashi's Perush on the first Pasuk. Let's take a look at Rashi's Perush on the first Pasuk. Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, Hashel Shlomo. You see, right below the text of the Rashi, Shir HaShirim, Hashel Shlomo. Shonu Rabbeinu Zal, our rabbis learned, Kol Shlomo Ha'amudim B'Shir HaShirim Kodesh. You go through Shir HaShirim, you may make the mistake of thinking that Shir HaShirim is just like Megillat Esther. The name of God doesn't appear in Shir HaShirim. The name of God doesn't appear. So Rashi brings our rabbis who say that wherever it says the name Shlomo in Shir HaShirim, you know who it really refers to? It's referring to God. Melech Shehashalom Shelo, the king who is the one who makes peace. By the way, we will get at in a later Shema, probably in the next Shema, we'll get to the Rambam who clearly established this as a halachic principle. Like you can't erase the name of God that's in a Sefer Torah. If you erase the name Shlomo in Shir HaShirim, you are in erasing Yud Kei Vav Kei. It has a halacha of Hashem Hashem. So that the idea that Shir HaShirim is an allegory, the story of the greatest love in history, by the way, that's the point I'm going to get to. The greatest love story in all of history is the love story between the Rabbeinu Shel Olam and Klal Yisrael. That's the only reason why we have survived through thick and thin. Why we are the most amazing people on the face of this earth, because we have a lover who is eternal, who has promised us, guaranteed us his eternal love. The whole story of Shir HaShirim is this greatest love story, because it's never ending. It's intense, it's powerful, and that's really what it's all going to be about. So number one, the first thing Rashi says, you should know, this is not just an allegory. It's not just a story, a love story. This is indeed the love story of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Klal Yisrael, and God exists in this Megillat Shir HaShirim throughout. Because Kol Shlomo Ha'amudim B'Shir HaShirim, every time it says Shlomo Shir HaShirim, Kodesh, it is holy. Because by holy we mean it has the halacha of a holy name of God that cannot be that cannot be erased. Thank you. Shir This is the song that is greater than all of the songs that have been said to the Holy One, blessed be He. May Eit Adato from His congregation and Amo His people, Knesset Yisrael, the people of Israel. This is the song that we sing. Shir HaShirim, the great song of all songs that we sing to Shlomo. By the way, our rabbis and Rashi said it on this pasuk because there's something in this pasuk that's different, for example, than the first pasuk in Mishle. Mishle was written by Shlomo. Mishle, Shlomo, Ben David. So it says these are the parables of Shlomo, the son of David. Kohelet, that was also written by him, is Divrei Koheles Ben David. Another name for Shlomo was Kohelet because he gathered people together, Kehilot, to listen to his wisdom. In the other two Svarim that are written by Shlomo HaMelech, it gives us his father's name and his title that he is king in Yerushalayim. Here's the only place where it just says, Shir HaShirim Asher LeShlomo. Shlomo who? Who is this Shlomo? Is this the same Shlomo we know? So he says that it was written Beruach HaKodesh and only written as Shlomo and not Ben David. It doesn't say the son of David. Because this Shlomo over here is a holy name. The song that we sing to God, whose name is Shlomo. Because Shalom, all peace, is his. I'm Rabbi Akiva. The Rabbi Akiva is the great statement of all. And Rabbi Akiva's statement is also, it's a Mishnah in Masechet Yadayim. If I remember, I'll have that Mishnah Xerox for you so you can see that great Mishnah where Rabbi Akiva makes, it is a halachic statement, not an agadic statement. Rabbi Akiva says, Lo hoyoho olam kedai kiyom shenitam bo shir hashirim liyisrael. The world, let's say, the greatest thing that ever happened in our history, the greatest day of ours, was the day that Shir HaShirim was given to Israel. Shekol HaKetuvim Kodesh, all of the holy writings are Kodesh. The Shir HaShirim Kodesh Kadoshim, and Shir HaShirim is the Holy of Holies. This statement of Rabbi Akiva is extremely, extremely important. It's very significant. There is an introduction to Shir HaShirim that was written by Rav Kook. I'm going to try to give over to you the main points of that great, profound, and powerful introduction. And there's a story behind the introduction. The story is brought by Rav Uzi Kallerhein, Zichrono Livracha. Anyway, the story goes like this. Rav Kook, before he had come on Aliyah, he was Rav in the city of Boisk in Lithuania, and he would take walks in the forest outside the city, and one day there was somebody who was walking with him, his constant companion, and the Rav started talking, Rav Kook started talking about Shir HaShirim, and this fellow hears that there are great things being said by Rav Kook. So he said, wait a minute. He took out a pencil. He most probably was ready whenever he went with Rav Kook that he had pencil and paper. And he told the Rav to sit down, write what you're saying now. And he wrote. And that's the Hakdama to Shir HaShirim. His introduction to Shir HaShirim was really a polemic. Because they're already in the end. This was, by the way, in 1901. The Rav is going to be come on Aliyah in 1904, 1905. When he will be Rav of Yafo. And already during the 19th century, the waves of the Haskalah movement in Europe, there were those who made fun of the whole idea that Shir HaShirim is an allegory of God and the Jewish people. Nah, these were songs, ballads written by Chassanim for their Kalas, Kalas for their Chassanim, lovers here, lovers there, and then they put it together. And, somebody came up with the great idea to say that this is an allegory, God and the Jewish people. Hey, not so. It's just a plain love story. So the Rav reacted to this very harshly. And he said, number of very classic statements. The purpose of literature, and he's talking about literature in general, the purpose of literature is to take the basic experiences, the feelings that are found in human beings, and there are many of all sorts that have to be find expression in literature. People have to write about it. They have to give people the ability to see more of themselves inside themselves. Sometimes, you know, you read a book and you get all of these feelings. You understand yourself a little better. You understand them. But he says there's one grave danger. Though it is important that all the experiences and all of the feelings of men should find expression in literature, and if there is even one that has not found its expression in literature, then it is lacking. But he says there's one area, the area of love between men and women. Great caution. Because there are people, and he creates an expression, chamor la'ava, a donkey of love. What he really means is a person who sees love only as chomer, only in its physical sense, but does not see love in its great spiritual sense. So he says there are a lot of people around who are chamor la'ava, and you know what they do? When they touch this subject, what they take, they take something that is holy and pure and make it filthy. We dare never permit them to do that. And he describes them as midgets. Midgets who are standing nanasim, gimadim, that are standing by a tall tower, chveza, a tower, what is it? Is this, which one is the tallest now in the world? Sears in Chicago. I mean, that we had two in New York. In New York, that once were. In Taiwan, there's something. And here are these little midgets down at the bottom and are looking at the stars. star shmas adunish magunish. That's it. And then there are people who are standing on the top of this tower and they're looking at the stars. There's an awesome difference between the two. The little guys down at the bottom don't have a clue. Incapable of seeing, incapable of appreciating, but they're certainly capable of expressing themselves. He says those who talk about shirashirim are the little midgets down at the bottom. And Chachmei Yisrael and Nevi'im of Klal Yisrael are the ones who stand at the top, at the very peak, the pinnacle, the apotheosis, and they're able to see a great deal better. So from here he goes on to say the following, and just let's take a look at Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva started life as a shepherd. Rabbi Akiva had a profound love for nature. The story of Rabbi Akiva and his wife Rachel is, of course, a classic love story of all time. She gives up everything for him. She is the daughter of Kalba Savua, the richest Jew in Yerushalayim. And she wants to marry this unlearned shepherd. My son-in-law, the ignorant shepherd. Can you imagine Kalba Savua? And she insists. He cuts her out of his will. Not a penny. And they end up, the Gemara says that they ended up in the winter sleeping in a barn. And in the morning, Rabbi Akiva would take the straw out of the hair. And then she encouraged him to go learn. The rest, of course, is history. Rabbi Akiva remains for all time the pillar of Torah Shebaal Peh. It's an unbelievable story. But Rabbi Akiva is much more than that. Who is the one that says, Love your friend like ze klal gadol b'Torah. That's the great law of Torah. That's said by Rabbi Akiva. This same Rabbi Akiva is the one when the Romans prohibit the study of Torah, he defies Rome. He defies Rome and gathers people together to teach them Torah because Rabbi Akiva is infused with a profound love for Torah. He loves nature. He loves Torah. He loves his wife. V'yahavta re'acha kamocha is the great love of his life. He loves his people Israel. Who is the one that gathers the forces of Klal Yisrael to do battle with the Romans? Who is the authority behind the Bar Kokhba battle against Rome? A bloody battle of 11 years. One of the great periods, great and tragic periods in Jewish history. It's all Rabbi Akiva. It's all Rabbi Akiva. Is that the only love? How many? We've mentioned every conceivable love except one yet. There's still one to come. The one love that is to come is probably the most awesome one of all. As the Romans were preparing to burn him at the stake, they began to peel the skin off of him. And he's saying Shema. And he tells his students, Kol Yomai, my whole life I yisi mitzayer al posik zeh. I was pained by this one posik in Torah. V'yahavtot Hashem Elokecha, you should love God your God. V'chol levavcha uv'chol nafshecha, even if it means you have to give your life. When will that posik be there standing before me and I will be able to fulfill it? And his neshama goes out with the word echad. We are talking about a Rabbi Akiva, therefore, who embraces and encompasses with his, in his own personality and neshama, all of the greatest loves of all in the most extreme and powerful manner. When Rabbi Akiva says, Lo hoya ha'olam kedai ki yom, the whole world was worth it just for that day that Shir HaShirim was given to Klal Yisrael. So we are talking about a person whose appreciation and his understanding and his deep feeling of love is so broad, so all-encompassing, so powerful. Where do the little midgets, come to Rabbi Akiva? The little midgets. So therefore, when Rabbi Akiva is the one who says that Shira Kol Hashirim, all of their songs are Kodesh, and Shir HaShirim is Kodesh Kodashim, is the Holy of Holies, then we are receiving this from the highest authority of all. There is nobody better than Rabbi Akiva to say this. Which brings me to something I've only touched upon in passing years ago. It has nothing to do with Shir HaShirim, but I don't know, I was talking to Rabbi Nachman Kahana a few days ago, and I haltingly said this to him, and if he was impressed, then I may not be too far off. I've been troubled by something, and it happens. I go through it every year. Period of the Sphira. What happened during the Sphira? The Gemara in Masechet Yevamos, Daf Samach Beis, Amud Beis. The Gemara says the following: there were 12,000 pairs of students that Rabbi Akiva had, 24,000 students, and all of them died in this period between Pesach and Shavuos. And the Gemara says, why did it happen? Shelo nohagu kavod zeh lo zeh. Because they didn't conduct themselves honorably one to the other. Now, I've had a lot of difficulty with that. You know what we're saying? We're saying the man who was the greatest example of Avas Torah, Avas Am Yisrael, Avas Ishto, failed with all of his 24,000 students? Is that what the Gemara wants to tell me? They didn't conduct themselves with honor to one another. This is what we tell me. Then, I mean, I know, I mean, I come on, I listen to the Radio Kol Chai and all the, and I hear all the shiurim on the radio. In other words, between the times that I'm driving from one place to the next. And yes, I heard there's a Zohar that says that the 24,000 Talmidim, they were a Gilgal from previous 24,000, and this was their punishment. I'm a plain guy. I'm a plain guy. I have difficulty. I don't understand these things. On the surface of it, it seems Rabbi Akiva, the great, the giant. I mean, God forbid, those of us, if we have one student who strays, we are pained by it. When we have a child who strays, we're pained by it. Here is the great Rabbi Akiva with 24,000 students. He didn't succeed with a single one. Is that what the Gemara is telling me? So I say I've had difficulty with the Gemara. And I wanted to say a different pshat in the Gemara. I know over here I can get away with it. There's a famous Gemara that says, a machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Ben Petura. The Gemara talks about the following. Two people are going, traveling through a desert, and only one of them has water. And they've reached a point, if they divide the water between the two of them, now I have the water and there's my friend. If I divide the water with my friend, both of us will die. We're not going to get out of the desert alive. If I keep all the water for myself, my friend is going to die, but I'm going to make it out of the desert. What's the halacha? What are you supposed to do? Ben Petura says, Mutav, it's best. Sheyishtu shneihem, both of them should drink. Val yire echad, neither one of them should see how his fellow dies. They're both going to die. That was the halacha ad shebor Rabbi Akiva v'limeid, until Rabbi Akiva came and he taught. I think the pasuk is in this week's sedra, one of the sedras of this week. V'chai ochicha imach, your brother shall live with you. Your brother shall live with you, Rabbi Akiva interpreted, chayecho kodmin l'chaye chavecho. Your life comes before. My brother should live with me, but first me, then you. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva said, the one who has the water, he should drink it, even though it means, of course, that his friend is going to die. So in other words, that means when two people are in danger and I'm able to save myself, what would Rabbi Akiva say? Rabbi Akiva would say, I have to save myself. Saving myself means, you know, that's what Rabbi Akiva said. I got to take care of myself. That's what Torah says. I want to say that what happened with the 24,000 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, they did not conduct themselves with their fellows with the covered, with the honor that Rabbi Akiva would have paskened. Rabbi Akiva would have paskened that each man has to take care of himself. And you know what they did? They decided, being the students of Rabbi Akiva, they're going to go out, and if necessary, they're not going to conduct themselves with this sense of me first, but they're going to give their lives if necessary for Klal Yisrael. Lo'inagu kavod ze l'ze, I read it as meaning they didn't say me first, even though Rabbi Akiva paskin like that. You know what they said? My Klal Yisrael needs us. They fell in battle against the Romans, that we know. They fell in battle against the Romans. Lo nogu kavod ze l'ze means they decided, just like their Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, who gives his life at the stake, they gave their lives in battle. I don't believe that any of them, were just plain, you know, they didn't act nice to one another, they were bad. 24,000 guys, you know, fighting around with each other, cats and dogs, that's not what the Gemara means to say. To be no hate covered, I say, means my dignity, Rabbi Akiva would have paskened means I have to take care of myself. If our lives in danger and I can save myself, I have to save myself. And they decided, no, our lives are in danger. We're all going out to fight. In a sense, you know what they were doing? This was Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva died with Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad on his lips, and they went out to battle, and they were the Roy Kleins of 2,000 years ago who went to their deaths fighting against the Romans in order to protect Klal Yisrael with Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Rabbi Akiva did not fail with his 24,000 students. His 24,000 students were 24,000 Rabbi Akivas and a little bit more. That's how I learned the Gemara. Will people agree with me? I don't know. But I think that before one just learns the Gemara simply as the great Rabbi Akiva has 24,000 students who are petty and small and are punished and put to death, that's very, very difficult for me to buy. I can't buy it at all. And I don't think I'm a kaifa bi'ikur if I don't buy it. I think on the contrary. We have to see Rabbi Akiva and his 24,000 students as being men of such greatness. We can't even imagine the extent of their greatness.